I live every single day of my life in a manner I feel good about myself, so that as each tomorrow is over, I am content with myself. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campo, California. And at the dinner table this evening, we're entertaining a crowd of beautiful people waiting to hear what's going to be said about, I live every single day of my life in a manner I feel good about myself, so that each tomorrow is over. When it's over, I'm content with myself. Okay?
Okay.
Think about that. Think about that. Are you happy with each day that you live? I have had this feeling within me. All of my life, I felt that if I were to die the next day or that same day, I would not feel that I left anything undone. Because every single day of my life, I've always done everything that I wanted to do to the best of my ability. And when nighttime came, I felt very satisfied, very peaceful, never giving a thought to, Miss Nosy over here, she thinks she knows an answer. You want to tell us what answer you think you know?
I know that you do that. I know that.
All right.
It has been always an example for me.
Okay. And that's true. If we, when we go to bed at night, feel that we have had an exciting, wonderful, fulfilling day, doing all the things that were amazing and delightful, and like I mentioned to all of you earlier, I said I was always treading where angels feared to tread. I was always doing things, at least the angels that I was taught about. I think now that the angels probably did even more than I did. they trod more areas than I did, even though I thought I went a lot of them. Because to me, it was fun to go wherever there was a need. We read a little story in one of the publications here. It was about telling happy things that children do. And it was one of the most thoughtful things that a child could do. And this writer, it was Leo Biscoli, I believe, this writer had to judge a contest of which child did the most amazing thing for a youngster as far as caring about another. And he told a story about the little boy, nice kid, and he came home with his parents from wherever they had been, school or wherever, and when they came in the yard, the little boy saw the neighbor man, an elderly man, sitting in his rocking chair, you know, one of these rockers that you have out in the on the grass, and crying and crying and crying. And the little boy thought, that's not nice. And so he went over there, and he jumped up into the man's lap and stayed there with him for, better than an hour. And when he came home, his mother said to him, well, sweetheart, what were you doing there? You know? And he says, well, his wife died, and he was crying, so I helped him cry. Now, the little boy was obviously untouched by the fact that the lady died, because he doesn't know anything about death. He doesn't know that that means you're not going to have the person around for a while, or maybe he did. But what he did know, that when someone is crying, everybody comes up and says, oh, that's all right now, that's okay, come on now, that's all right. Everyone wants to placate them and satisfy them in some way. And that is what he did. Now, he sat there for quite a while. But he not only sat there, he helped the man cry. Now, how do you think that made the man feel? That somebody else shared his sorrow. I don't recommend us sharing sorrow with anybody or ever having sorrow to share. But that was a very caring thing for that young man. Now, what kind of an adult do you think he's going to grow up to be? He's going to grow up to be an adult who is alert to people's feelings, to their emotions. He's going to be alert to their hearts and their life. He may not cry with them as they cry, or he may too. But I would like to offer this point. When he cries with them, He is not involved. He is only involved in the act of praying. He's only involved in the act of sharing some sadness in the respect of crying with another person. He has no idea what the crying means, and that's good. He has no idea that it means loss, that it means separation, that it means sadness in the man's heart. He may have felt that the man had a pain or a hurt in his heart, but obviously he didn't understand it, and that's beautiful. And I'm sure all of his life he goes around visiting with people, sharing with people, and whenever there is someone who has a little hurt, he gets down there with them to make the hurt go away. When he sees someone who has their puppy, and their puppy has just been hurt, and they're holding their puppy and crying, he gets down on all fours with them, and he says, "There, there. What can we do to make him better? Now you just kiss him and make him well. Let's take him to the vet and see what can be done." And he doesn't say, "Oh my God, who did this terrible thing? We must get after them for doing this terrible thing. Nobody should do such a terrible thing to a little puppy dog. Oh, goodness sakes alive," you know. And you don't do that, do you? You don't do that. Because it doesn't matter who did it or why it happened. All you're caring about is the moment now. And the characters in the play of the moment now. And if you can be so unconditionally loving, so untouchable, so unpossessed by the situations that face you in your life, you're a master. You say, "Oh boy, I'm going to do that. I want to be a master." It does have to come more or less naturally. It's not something we could put on like another pair of shoes. Because you try to do that. You try to do that. I know I heard one lady say one time, when the neighbor lady was praised for being a gentle lady, she said, "I've done all the things that lady has done. I have taken soup to the sick. I have done this and I have done that, and nobody appreciates me." Well, they never will. Because she's got her praise by her barking. She got her praise from her world. But the lady who got the praise was undoubtedly one who never said a thing. She just went about little kindnesses, little carings, wherever she was, and blessed the world. Now, she didn't like to think that the world was going through a lot of problems. That was not the point. She just thought that as everyone is finding their divine self, they have a little sadness in the loss that they have. And if we can go into the lives of others who are having that little bit of sadness and not make them feel better, but make them feel that someone understands and cares about what they're going through and how they're making their adjustment to this new understanding. When you can do that, to yourself first, of course, when you can do that, my goodness, the things that happen in your life, the doors that open, the magic that opens. We've read stories about Edison and another Einstein and other famous people, and it is said that they made, you know, so many thousand mistakes before they finally achieved the light bulb and things like that. Well, that's not true. They had 1,000 expressions of their inner wisdom, misunderstood, but worked on. And then they found that that wasn't quite right. Now, if Mr. Edison had just talked with me ahead of time, he wouldn't have had all that trouble. Because I tell him the story about the boy who wanted to kiss the girl on the street. And God says, "Go right ahead." And the boy ran out there and got kissed. And wacko, he got flying across the street. And he came back and he said, "God, I thought you said I could kiss her." "Sure you can. But you didn't wait until hear all that I said. You can kiss her, but she'll whack you across the street. She won't take that from anybody." Now, we don't listen to the divine within when we have a problem. All we do is feel sorry for ourselves. And when we feel sorry for ourselves, we close the door on the great joy and the great wisdom that's going to come from it. Like I was telling Ellen today, the wisest man in the world is the most silent. It's not that he is very brilliant, but he lets each person find it themselves. And he doesn't go in and say, I'm wise, I got the answer for you, I'm the guru. No. He lets each person find it for themselves. And he guides them, if he's given the privilege, to finding it in themselves. But a wise man, for many reasons, and several you're well acquainted with, will not give another person advice or direction. Because if they don't follow the advice and they say they follow it, they're going to blame the guy who gave it to them. And this is never worth it. All you want to do is to get the person to come to their own conclusion. And when you do that, then they're responsible. Say, hey, whatever you choose to do, just remember, it's something from your heart. It's something that you want to do. But you know what to do. You've been there. That's right, I've been there. And you know what happened to me? I listened to the divine within me, and I followed it. And I can guarantee you, the divine within me is going to tell me something different than the divine within you. Why is that? Because I have trained myself to listen to the divine within. And I hear the whole story. I don't hear just a part of it. When you are not trained to listen to the divine within, you hear good news and you think that's the whole story. But you got to hear the whole story. The whole story is, today you're going to win $1 million. And tomorrow you're going to be tempted by a very sad circumstance that your money is going to save the life of this person or child. And your money, or some money, that amount, just the amount that you have, is needed for that particular thing. Now, what are you going to do? Take your money and run? Or are you going to put it to work where somehow it was brought to your attention? How many times do you have someone who has a $1 million illness that has to be taken care of, you know? Or a $795,000 illness, which is exactly the amount you have, you know? Nothing happens by chance. You see, these things that happen to us, you say, oh, my God. Well, these things that happen to us are tests that we give to ourselves. How much are we possessed by the mind? You didn't have it before, and you don't have it after because you give it away. But before, you didn't have that good feeling that you really were a blessing to someone, mainly yourself. But afterwards, you say, I'm damn good. And then after a little while, you say, I'm so glad that it's helping them. And then after a while, you say, oh. So it is. And you just release it. And you don't go around telling people what you did. Because the minute you go around telling people what you did, you cut yourself off from the opportunity to do these things again. And you know, it's fun to do those things. And all of you, at one point or another in your life, have done it. You have given some gracious gift to somebody, not because they needed it, not because they wanted it, but because you wanted to do it. You know, you can be a wealthy person. Bill Gates is a wealthy person. Now, if Bill Gates were to walk through the children's ward at the children's hospital and see these children that need operations, that need this, that need that, and the money isn't there because they're so tremendously expensive. They're helped, but they're only helped to a degree. Do you think that Bill Gates would unloose his billions of dollars to help those children? No. No. He cannot. Because the moment he starts to do that, which hospital is he going to quit with? Which one? Is he going to just like the hospitals in Oregon or Washington or California? Who's he going to like? Who's he going to bless? You know what he does? He completely turns it over to his wife, who is running the organization to give away money. And people present her and her team with requests. And she has many professional people, highly paid professionals, who are able to see through any con game and see through any reality or lack of reality. But you see, Bill Gates is wise not to get involved. Because when Bill Gates' mother died, he had been trying to do his best to help her with the cancer that she was going through. And so what does he do? He funds a great cancer hospital, research hospital, to look into the disease that she had so that others might not have to suffer that. Now, he didn't go there because other people were suffering it. He gave to that so that other people don't have to suffer from it. See, that's a big difference. He's not meeting a one-on-one case, which are endless. He is meeting a circumstance of finding a cure, finding something that will help others as time goes on. It's really wonderful. And are we able to do such a thing? I live every single day of my life in a manner that I feel good about myself, so that as each tomorrow is over, I'm content with myself. I live every day of my life so that as each moment is over, I'm content with myself. You say, well, how come you're bitching at us? How come you're hollering at us? Hey, that's my game, is to be irritable to you and have you be untouched. And you know that. And if you're going to be touched when I'm irritable to you, you ain't seen nothing. You ain't seen nothing. Because you see, you're the ones who said you wanted to walk your spiritual path. You're the ones who said you wanted to be untouchable, one-pointed, unpossessed, non-judgmental. You wanted to be self-determined, self-dedicated, self-diligent, self-disciplined. You know, you're the ones who said that. Unconditionally loving. And you know what it means to be unconditionally loving? It means you don't have any relatives. You don't have any children or any wife or any husband. You don't have anybody, because there's nobody you love more than another. You love everybody equally, and that is not something we're trained to do. But you see, when you make that little, it's just a little jog, just a little step of loving everybody in the same way. When you make that step, you've reached your spiritual peak. You've reached that wonderful point of awareness. And you can do it. But you don't want to do it, primarily because it's not very much fun. It is cold. There is no reason to be warm or caring or loving. There's no reason for it. I was talking to my wife, and she had a problem. And she says, what shall I do? And I said to her, coldly and very objectively, you might say, did you always tell the truth? She says, yes. And I said, well then, forget it. If you're honest, you have nothing to be concerned about. It's only if you're dishonest you have something to be concerned about. She says, well, I must go and ask this lady who is in charge and doing these things what one does who commits fraud, you know, what one does. And I said, you are an idiot. Have you committed fraud? No. Well, then keep your nose out of that area. That's not where you belong. And she's telling me all about the problems going on in Libya. I said, my goodness sakes, that's on the other side of the world. I said, you got enough things right here to be concerned about, to love yourself with. And then Mark is off at the EAA fly-in in Oshkosh. She said, he's having a good time. Well, that's the only story we'd ever give her. And that's all he does have, is a good time. But you see, we buy trouble by putting our nose into areas that are of no concern to us. And as we buy this trouble, we also buy a bridge leading away from unconditional love. And that bridge is a very nice bridge, a little slippery going the other way. But we buy it by our thoughts that we are supposed to be putting our nose in other people's business. You know? As I was walking the path this morning, I looked at the ruts in the road from the rain. And I thought, oh, I could take a rake and do this and do that. And I said, yeah, but I'm writing some other stuff. And, well, you should get out there and take the rake and do this. I said, I'm writing some other stuff. And then, you should take the rope, a rake, and go out there and do it. Look, I am not here to be a caretaker for acres. I am here to be myself and have fun. I am here to write what I want to write. I am here to be a free spirit. And no way am I going to be bound for that. When Brian comes, he'll take the tractor and droop, or the prince here, you take the tractor and go, or whatever, yeah? Right. And I am not going to feel guilty not doing it. You understand? In the early days, I ran the whole show by myself, and I never felt guilty about anything because I did everything, you know. And so there was not a problem. But later on, as you move into different levels of expression, you feel guilty about not doing all the things you always used to do. But you don't get a lot of fun stuff done if you're just going to be busy all the time. Now, did you notice how quickly Sylvia agreed to go in town to buy the new dishwasher? Oh, sure, yeah. And did you have fun?
Yep.
Do you know how to do anything else?
Yep.
Wonderful. And you see, who created her going in town doing this?
I.
Well, I don't want to take your thunder, but she did.
Yes, of course.
She did. You allowed her, but she created it. And that's beautiful. But remember, with that comes a responsibility. If you can do it once, you got to do it all the time. You got to create having fun all the time. Everything you do is having fun. Everything you choose to do, whatever it may do, be. And if you don't like doing something, create somebody who wants to do it. Mm-hmm. That's so simple. Mm-hmm. So I live every single day of my life, in a manner in which I feel good about myself, so that as each tomorrow is over, I am content with myself. That sentence is very poorly worded for speaking. But that's true. Each moment, you feel happy about what's in the past. Not that you think about the past, but you're just content. So, go for it, loves, and have yourself a ball, and remember,
love you.
Da, 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 da. Who's watching?
God is watching.
God is watching. God is watching you.
From within.
From within. Hey, yes. Cool. That's cool. Yeah. God is watching from within. That's beautiful. Have a great evening. And just remember, I do not want you to think about me. Think about yourself and enjoy it.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
I love you. I love you. I love you.